Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. What happens when you combine magic with word games and crossword puzzles? You get my next guest. So sit back, relax, and grab your favorite beverage, and I'll see you on the other side. See you there. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Story, sponsored by Inside the Asperger Studios. Today, I'm joined by magician and crossword enthusiast, David Kwong. Welcome to the show, David.
Hello, hello. Thank you so much.
So, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Okay, well, I do wear these two hats. I am both a magician and a New York Times crossword constructor. In the show that you saw, which is called The Enigmatist, I blend all those things I love, illusions, puzzles, history. There's a cool history story about the America's first code breakers. And I'm so glad you got to see that.
So, when did you know you wanted to become a magician?
And just for just wanted to say, for those of you watching on the Zoom, I've been having some trouble with my eyes, so I'll look away from time to time if you don't mind. When did I know I wanted to be a magician? Was that the question?
Yes.
I've been doing magic my whole life, but I did not really think there was a professional career in being a magician until much later. So I started when I was a little kid, probably 7 years old, and then I was learning sleight of hand as a teenager, and then as a young adult, I was. I had normal desk jobs, so to speak, and I didn't think that there was a real job of being a magician. But when I was 30, the light bulb turned on for me, and I realized I can take all these things that I love and cross-pollinate them together and create this new type of magic. So that's how my brainy, nerdy, cerebral magic show was born.
Now, what did your parents have to say when you told them you wanted to become a magician?
My parents are both professors. They've always been supportive, but they were concerned, I'll say. And they just always wanted to make sure I would land on my feet. So the thing is that I also was a little bit conservative in my forays into magic. So I did not run away with the circus. I always myself, in addition to going to college, I had normal jobs, so to speak. So I was not ready to declare that I was going to be a magician right away either. But there became this point when I was working in Hollywood, I was working in movies at DreamWorks Animation, and I decided that I was going to quit that studio job to go on set and design magic and teach magic for Now You See Me, the big bank heist movie. And that was that moment when I declared, I think I'm going to give this a full court press and really try. So they were concerned but supportive.
Now, how did you come up with the idea of combining magic with word puzzles?
I think it started with the signature trick that I do at the end of my show, which is building a crossword puzzle in real time. And that was born out of a great tradition in magic shows and mentalism shows of mental gymnastics. So you see people throughout history doing magic squares with numbers. You see chess tricks like the Knight's Tour. You see memorization tricks where Harry Lorraine memorizes hundreds of people's names in the audience. You see people memorizing a deck of cards that's been shuffled. The crossword puzzle to me seemed like a feat of mental gymnastics. Can I do this and tap dance on stage, putting everything together as quickly as possible? I then at the same time realized, well, what's my surprise ending? What's my kicker, as we call it? And I reasoned that I could, as you saw in the show, have a playing card selected and hide that in the crossword puzzle.
Now, Now, here's the question I'm not sure you're able to answer, but why do you think we're seeing more and more magicians coming out of Asia? People like Shin Lin and everybody we see, like all the magicians we see in AGT now are coming from Asia and they're fantastic.
Shin Lim, I'm not quite sure what his background is. I believe he's American born. I think he's from Boston. His mother, whom I've met in the past, may be an immigrant, but I'm not sure. So I think that is, I think that's just coincidence. I don't, he is an expert in manipulation, which is the, sleight of hand in a larger scale. So one could liken that performance style to the great manipulators of Asia, but I'm not sure where he draws his inspiration. But you are correct that there have been a number of champions on America's Got Talent and FISM, which is the FISM, that is like the Olympics of magic, that have come out of Asia. I think there's something going on right now where Japanese and Chinese magicians are coming up with beautiful, artful sleight of hand routines, usually at the table, that require manipulation and clever techniques of disguising things. I can't go into too much detail, but very clever technical tables and table manipulations, and it's really produced some amazing magic.
Now, your show, in your show, you talked about a story about the two code breakers, the husband and the wife. How did you come about that story to weave it into your own story of telling ma about magic and crossword puzzles and everything else?
Well, I came across the story of William and Elizabeth Friedman when I was doing research at the New York Public Library in their very rich archive. And the tricks that you saw in the show were my puzzle-based magic tricks that I've been doing a long time. So I realized I needed a story that I could tell around that to weave the whole night together and create a cohesive narrative arc. So I at the beginning of this, I was looking for, at first I was looking for codes that had never been solved, so I kind of went down that path. But eventually I stumbled across the Baconian cipher and this idea that Sir Francis Bacon had hidden a secret code in Shakespeare. And that is an unsolved code because some people don't think it's real. And William and Elizabeth Friedman certainly didn't think it was real. But this couple, they were America's first code breakers. And that illustrious career of code breaking and working for the government and being founding fathers, rather founding parents of the NSA, that came out of them hunting for this elusive code in Shakespeare.
That's interesting. So they were the founders of the NSA.
Well, I'm a little hazy on the government history there, but I know that in 1921, Elizabeth and William Friedman leave the outskirts of Chicago, where they've been looking for this code in Shakespeare at the request of a mad textile magnate who had a lot of money named George Fabian. And they in 1921 they move to DC to work for the Signal Corps, which at the time was the code breaking outfit, and they are building cipher machines and they are teaching officers what they've learned about code breaking. And eventually William becomes the chief cryptographer for the US. Elizabeth, she joins the Treasury Department. She's cracking codes that rum runners are using to smuggle in rum. Now I didn't know this, Reed, but someone came up to me afterward in the lobby and told me that Al Capone had put a hit on Elizabeth Friedman's head
Wow.
because of her efforts, I believe, in either the rum running prohibition or prohibition in general. But I thought that was a cool factoid. I'd have to look into that.
Now, how did you get involved with designing crossword puzzles?
Well, my love for words and word puzzles comes from my mother, who's a history professor and loves word games and word play. And we played a lot of Scrabble when I was younger. And so that's always been in my DNA. And I've always loved it. And when I was in college, I met a guy named Kevin Chosett, who is also a prolific crossword writer. And he showed me how to do it. And we had our first puzzle as a co-construction in the New York Times in 2003. So over 20 years ago, I had my first one in the Times.
All right. Have you ever been stumped when trying to design a crossword puzzle?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In a number of different ways. Sometimes you can't get everything to fit. Sometimes the things you want to put in there are not symmetrical in length, which is one of the main parameters. I will tell you that you might find this interesting. I was trying to do a puzzle that had people's names that were baby animals, right? So like Ryan Gosling is a baby goose. And I wanted to do, I just could not get the right lengths to work out. So there's an actress named Joey King.
Yeah.
Who is, you know, baby kangaroo is a Joey.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Gen Z really likes Joey King. Let me just make sure that's who I got the right person.
Yeah, I've heard of here. Joey King. Yeah, she's been in the Kiss.
Yeah, I got it right. Yes, exactly. You know that. Yeah. But you know what? I think that Joey King would not quite pass muster as a marquee answer in the New York Times crossword just yet. I could see her being a filler answer, but for a marquee one, I don't think the older generation knows who she is yet. So I am waiting for her to be more famous so that I can use her in the crossword puzzle. And it will, I can't remember what my layout is, but you know, the other Joeys that I came up with, Joey Fatone and all these other things, they just aren't the right length. I need Joey King. So I'm waiting for her. She's very famous. I mean, she's got millions of Instagram followers, but I don't think my parents' generation know who she is.
No, she's too young yet. I mean, she's the Taylor Swift generation.
Yeah.
What advice do you have for kids who want to get into magic?
I'm so glad you asked that, because I have a kid's book of magic tricks coming out on October 8th with HarperCollins. It is called How to Fool Your Parents. And I'll send you the cover of that, and you hopefully can share it with everybody.
Yeah.
And my advice is have fun with it. This book is all about, it's a celebration of being nerdy and cerebral and clever and devious all at the same time. And I think we're in a great age of that right now, where we can celebrate kids being smart. So specific advice I would have is, the best way to have fun with magic tricks is to make them your own. And the way that I kind of found my own personality with puzzles, I encourage any young magician, from little kids to young adults, to present magic in their own personal novel way instead of copying the way that's been previously done. And that's the danger of magic all over YouTube and TikTok right now, is that you see somebody else performing it, and then you just mimic their style. But when I was learning, I was reading books on it, and you're turning those pages and you're trying to understand what the heck is going on in these diagrams. And once you can figure that out, you just imagine yourself how your presentation is going to be. And I think that's a lot better for innovation.
All right.
That's my theory. Yeah.
What magicians have inspired you?
Well, without question, Penn and Teller, who are still going strong. And I think what sensibility we have in common is that there's a little irreverency. They're much more irreverent than I am, but we don't pretend to have superpowers. I acknowledge right up front in my show that magic is not real. It's tricks. And I liken it to a puzzle that you are supposed to figure out. So we both like pulling back the curtain on magic and revealing some of the scientific ways that magic tricks are done. And I just have so much great respect for them.
All right. Have you ever had someone tell you that your puzzles are too hard?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. In fact, I joke myself that a puzzle I had 2 years ago, let me get the exact date, was the puzzle that America hated. It was a Sunday New York Times crossword. Let me see. Let me look this up real quick. I'll get the exact date for you. Here we go. It was a Sunday puzzle on September 6th, 2020. And it was called Could You Repeat That Number? And I encourage anyone listening to go solve that puzzle. And if you don't want the spoiler, then you can skip this part. But basically, I don't know, Reed, like it was too, there was one layer too many, and people didn't never got to that layer. And it kind of befuddles me, but people filled the puzzle out and they got the little chime from the New York Times crossword that says that you finished the puzzle. Da, 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 and everybody goes, yay, I'm done. And they didn't look at the puzzle and think, well, why does this answer work? Why does this answer work? And they just moved on. And likewise, they dismissed the puzzle as being uninteresting, but they didn't look to see what that deeper layer was. And anyway, I guess I didn't give anything away there. You could still solve it.
All
There
right.
was no spoiler in that at all. Yeah.
Now we get to the questions everyone wants to hear. Where did you grow
Okay.
up?
Oh, I grew up in Rochester, New York.
All right. What motivates you, inspires you, and drives you?
Well, I am motivated by trying to come up, to echo what I said before, trying to come up with brand new magic tricks. And to be perfectly honest, the way you come up with a new magic trick is for the most part putting a new spin on old tricks that have been around for 120 years. So what drives me is to find cool puzzles and smart ways to transform old magic tricks into something new.
All right. What's the best compliment you've ever gotten?
I did a show in Los Angeles once, and it was for a couple of Hollywood directors who are good friends of mine now, Phil Lord and Chris Miller. And you'll know them from Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, Clone High, the Spider-Verse animated movies. They've won now Academy Awards for, they did 21 Jump Street. They're brilliant directors. They came out to me afterward. I can't remember. I think it was Phil that said this to me. And he said, you do magic with people, not to people. I thought that was the nicest thing. That my magic show, you've seen it, is very participatory. There's a lot of audience participation. Everyone feels like they are building something together. And I believe, because I try to do this, that I'm not ever alienating anybody or seeming too cool for school. I'm trying to build something in a communal fashion.
All right. What's your biggest failure and what did you learn from that experience?
Oh boy. Gosh, I've had all sorts of failures. The you this as a single performer, this is a one-man business. And I've made many forays to try to do cool things and stay relevant and be on people's radars. And I've had many projects that I've tried to get, I've sold TV shows that have not materialized, but I have sold that have gotten on the air. So I try things, and when they fail, you just have to pick yourself up and try something else. And there's a little bit of oscillation for me. Usually when I try something that is at the the behest of like a big company, right? Like executives are deciding whether or not a TV show is going to happen. If that fails, then I usually pull it in. I say, okay, now I'm going to write a book because it's just me in charge of this material. And then maybe I'll try something else. And I can't remember what it was. Something preceded the Enigma test. And I remember saying to myself, well, that big corporate thing didn't work. I'm going to just do my own magic show. And I'm in charge of the material myself. Nobody can touch this. I'm going to put it out into the universe, and I know people are going to like it. So anyway, that all gets distilled down to I'm ambitious. I try things that aren't always going to work. I swing for the fences. And, you know, if you strike out, then you just you have another at bat, and you make it work the next time.
All right. Tell me about three influential people in your life and how they impacted you.
Okay. Certainly my mother. She gave me my love for words, and still every day we get on the phone and we solve the New York Times spelling bee puzzle together. And well, we talked about Penn and Teller as magical influences. My father also has been a big influence on me. He's also an academic, so I get this kind of cerebral braininess quite naturally from them. And my father was part of this indelible moment for why I became a magician. And that story, I'll tell it succinctly, is that when I was young, I think I was about 7 years old, I went to a pumpkin patch to pick a pumpkin for Halloween. This is in Rochester, New York, at Bauman Farms. And there was a magician there performing, and he did a classic magic trick. He took a little red sponge ball and he placed it in my hand, and then he made a second one disappear. And when I opened my hand, I had two red sponge balls. It's a classic trick. Lots of party magicians do it, and it's a really, really good trick. But then what happened is he performed it one more time, and this time he did it for my father. And he placed the little red ball in his hand, made the second one disappear. My father opened his hand. He had two. And I turned to my father, who is a scientist, a biochemist, an omniscient figure to me. And I said to him, how did that work? And he turned to me and said, I have no idea. And that's the moment when I knew I wanted to be a magician. I just knew that I needed what that magician had. He was able to fool my dad. I needed to be like that guy.
What makes you feel inspired or like your best self?
Well, gosh, I'm a new dad.
Congratulations.
My little girl's, thank you. She's now 15 months. And billions of people have said that before me, but it changes a lot. And I'm out there trying to do magic shows, trying to earn a living, to support my family, and also by example, lead by example, that it's okay to be independent and working hard. And I thought about this a lot when I was in Chicago, because I was away from my family for a month. And as I wrestled with that, being away from my little girl, and someone gave me this advice. They said, when your little girl sees you doing that, she will appreciate that you are out there being independent and working hard. And that meant a lot to me. So, that really inspires me from a personal point of view. Creatively, I'm inspired by, gosh, all of my, I work with brilliant magicians. I'm a very good and confident performer. There are magicians that are so clever and encyclopedic when it comes to designing magic tricks. I rely heavily on my friends and colleagues who can help me come up with the coolest thing to do in a given moment. If I have to go on TV, if I have to make a special appearance, when I'm giving my TED Talks, I am relying on brilliant people like Francis Minotti and John Stessel, and my production designer, Brett Benakis. And he is Broadway level production designer. Talk about magic. He's like a big guy on Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. There are brilliant people out there that I lean heavily on. So they really inspire me.
You know, I'm probably one of the few people who realized when I was looking at your set, your bookshelves were actually code. Everyone was a different form of code. And my
Yes,
mind
that's
just
right.
didn't
And
pick it up. But I knew it somewhere deep down, it was code for something.
yes, it's my favorite part of the show, actually. It's the kind of postscript. As I'm leaving the stage, sometimes I turn around and watch my own light show. The projector lights up all of the codes that were on the bookshelf right in front of you the whole time. And speaking of another inspiring figure in my life, I mentioned the magicians. My friend Dave Shucan is one of the most brilliant puzzle makers in the country, if not the world. And he was really behind that bookshelf, and we collaborate on almost everything involving puzzles. So he's a genius also.
You know, my mother had told me as we're leaving your show after I talked with you, she's like, you know, if I had enough time, I could have solved your picture puzzles in the other room.
Oh yeah. The in the lobby, the four puzzles.
Yeah, if I had enough time and it was empty, I would have been able to focus on them, figure them out, and been able to solve them.
So just to catch everybody who's listening up to speed, there is an ante room, a puzzle garden that you must solve to get into the theater. And if you don't feel like solving puzzles or if you don't have time, then we, of course, let you in anyway. But the original concept for the show was in New York, which I ran in 2019, and it was at the Highline Hotel. And there were three rooms. You would first wind through this dark sort of stone Gothic corridor, and you would emerge into these three rooms. The room to the left was like a bar and a sitting area where you could play some games. But the middle room was the puzzle room. And it had four walls. And when I originally conceived the show, I thought it would, I wanted people to solve an escape room to get into the show. But that proved to be difficult, you know,
That
because
would
you have
be
100, 200 at the Kennedy Center, 330 people trying to get through. So we changed it to being, instead of opening drawers and pulling levers, to being rather passive, that you're looking at four things. So there were four walls with lots of space. And people would stand in front of these walls and solve the puzzles there. And there were ample hints given if people needed a little bit of a nudge. And it's different at every venue. I've now done it at the Geffen Playhouse in Los Angeles, where they have the puzzles outside in a garden. And I've done it at the Kennedy Center. And then here at Chicago Shakes, it was at first in a different room. Actually, before you must have seen it, was did you see it in the lot when they were in the lobby or in a room, Reed?
It was in a room.
Yeah, okay,
Like
so
a
you
one
saw
room,
you
and then
saw,
that room you exit out,
yes.
and it leads you right into the theater.
Well, if you thought that was crowded, it became even more crowded a week later because they moved it into the lobby.
Oh,
Because
God.
apparently they had some difficulty shepherding people into the theater. And I think it made a lot of congestion, which was a bit of not the most ideal way to solve puzzles. So look, it's a fun way to get people ready and conditioned for the show. And it all secretly ties into everything later. And it's a lot of fun.
I mean, one of the things that really blows my mind about it is every show you do, that last word you get from the audience changes every time, and it matches up with whoever gives you that dollar bill.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers and a lot of callbacks, and hopefully have enough layers in there that if you figure out one thing, you're still fooled by a few more.
Anyways, finish this sentence. I'm at my best when
I am on stage performing that show. I have mentioned a lot of different facets to my career. When you're a one-man operation, you are promoting yourself, you are shooting videos, you're doing TED Talks, I'm writing books, I'm writing articles. I am at my best when I'm on that stage doing what I love sharing it with people, and I'm just kind of nerding out the whole time. And I think people can feel that authenticity. In fact, this is a nice segue into like one final piece of advice I have to young magicians, to young performers, and to anyone in life. Authenticity, it took me a while to find that. That's the most important thing. I was doing magic like everybody else. I was a good sleight of hand artist. I was performing these tricks largely in the same mode as everybody else. But I eventually found my voice and I found what I love. And I think that genuine spirit is what has set me apart now. And not only set me apart, but I love doing it, right? I am on stage just being me, and that makes all the difference.
All right. If you could turn back time and talk to your 18-year-old self, what would you tell him about where you are now in life?
Is it 18 or 8?
18.
18. 18-year-old self was just going off to college, I suppose. And I think the advice I would give him is that that life has many twists and turns to it. And, you know, one should not go into college thinking they're going to study a certain thing and then do this certain type of job. You know, in today's day and age, all the young people, they have like, I wish I knew what the statistics were for this offhand. People change jobs now like 3 or 4 times, right?
I mean,
and yeah.
I went to a,
please go ahead.
I went to a market research a long time ago for job changing. And one of the things they had us do is they go, okay, go up on that wall. There's papers on the wall. Write down every job you've had. I wrote down 2 jobs. I'm looking left and right. Everyone had 10 to 15 different jobs. I'm like,
yeah.
I'm looking at the woman. I'm like, am I doing this right? I only had 2 jobs. Do I even belong here? She's like, did you change jobs? I'm like, yeah. She's like, then you belong here. I'm like, holy shit. These people, these kids have changed jobs 10 to 15 different times.
Yeah. And the moral of the story for me is that all those different experiences become relevant. So I graduated college. I went to New York. I got a corporate job, but then I quit suddenly to go move to Asia, to Hong Kong, where my father's from, because I wanted to learn about that part of my heritage. And I was 24 at the time, which now seems so young, but you know, once again, my parents are thinking, what are you doing? You have a HBO. You have this wonderful job. You're going to quit to just go live in Asia. And you know, I did that and it was important. It became relevant. That international experience, it helped me get my next job when I came back to LA. And then working for a movie studio, learning how to do storytelling, that helped shape the performances I do now. And it's like everything that you do, as long as you're doing it with an open mind and you're moving forward, it all becomes relevant. So I would tell my 18-year-old self not to be so focused on a linear path. And I guess I'm just affirming to myself that it's been a good journey.
All right. If you could have a billboard with anything on it, what would it be and why?
I would want to come up with some cool optical illusion billboard. I don't quite know what that is yet, but it would be fun to, you see something from one angle, it looks like something or some bit of wordplay. I don't know what it is yet, but that seems like an opportunity to have a bit of fun.
What do you think the world will look like in 5 years from now?
I think that the internet and AI is rapidly gaining speed, and I think we all have to be very careful and limited. For my own point of view, for my own career, I'm trying to both adapt to it and embrace some of it. I just did a TED talk with ChatGPT doing a magic trick with AI, but at the same time, I'm also pushing back, because what I like about my show is that it's a little bit of a throwback to a more practical age when we're using our brains and our hands. So it's a rapidly accelerating time. It's a bit scary, but I think it's also creating some very cool things. And you just have, we all have to be open-minded and flexible and adjust to it and make sure that we're embracing it the right way and protecting ourselves.
All right. What was your favorite subject in school?
Probably history. Maybe I get that from my mother, who's the history professor, but I majored in that in college, and it was a broad enough of a discipline that I could focus on my love for magic, which I've had throughout all these years. So I studied Houdini, and I studied the great rivalry of Ching Ling Fu and Chung Ling Su, and the great magicians from the Golden Age, Thurston and Keller and Dante. And I love the early 1900s.
Would you consider yourself an introvert, an extrovert, or an ambivert?
I think I'm an extrovert. I am a very social person, and I love performing. And I think I really draw a lot on other people's energy. I don't know if you call that insecurity. I need that validation or what, but I like to be out there hanging out with people.
All right. If you could be remembered for one thing, what would it be and why?
Well, I hope it doesn't seem too shallow, but I'm very proud of the career that I've built, and there are very few magicians in that long tapestry of magicians over the last couple hundred years. Like, only a few every generation are really making a difference and advancing the art form. And I would love to be known for having done that myself.
All right. And tell me about where you are now in life.
Well, physically right now I'm in Michigan. I got married a couple of years ago to a lovely woman from Ann Arbor. And we had a baby 15 months ago. Name's Cosette. And I am, in terms of my stage of life, I'm loving being a dad. I'm loving working hard to provide for my family. And it just keeps getting better and better every day.
Right. Now we get to the stuff people want to hear, the famous ending question. What is your favorite word?
Oh, wow. Okay. So I like the word facetious and facetiously, because that word has every vowel in it once in order. A-E-I-O-U and Y, if you're doing facetiously, in order just once.
All right. What's your name?
You also get that with abstemious as well.
All right.
And then I also like the word quixotry, which is a variant of quixotic, because that is a word that was played in a competitive game of Scrabble that broke all the records. That word, that single word, garnered 365 points because it hit two triple word scores at the same time and doubled up the X and the Q, and it was totally crazy. Okay, what is my least favorite word?
Yeah.
I don't know if such a thing exists. I love them all. I don't like how some people are starting to spell woe, W-O-A-H. It drives me crazy.
All right. What turns you on creatively, spiritually, and emotionally?
Creatively, I love coming up with new puzzle magic tricks, and I'm working on the next show that will have a similar DNA of interacting with people. Spiritually, I don't know. I don't know spiritually. I'm kind of a real skeptic because I'm a magician. So, but emotionally is certainly the fact that I am a new dad. So that's been, my daughter is the light of my life.
Right. What turned you off?
I think close-mindedness and people that aren't willing to accept facts and be and embrace smarts. And, you know, I'm just a true like academic and meritocrat at heart. So, you know, learning is key. And, you know, we're in a really charged climate right now in this country, and it boggles my mind that some people don't respect learning and education and facts.
All right. What's your favorite curse word?
I love all these like words that throw back to like the 1950s. So even a description of a curse word that you see in crossword all the times is when you say something is a mild oath, O-A-T-H. I love that. But there are all sorts of mild oaths like Godzooks and things like that that always tickle me. Right. I think even tickle me is a 1950s phrase. I sound like an old man.
All right. What sound or noise do you love?
What sound or noise do I love? I don't know. Probably my little girl laughing has been really, you know, lights me up from inside. And then what sound or noise do I hate, Reed?
Yep.
Is cell phones going off during my performance. It happens every show. It's modern life, and it drives me nuts.
What's your favorite color?
No, if I have an answer to that, I like the word fuchsia because it's incredibly hard to spell. Do you know how to spell fuchsia, Reed?
Fushia.
Close. The best way to remember it is the botanist Fuchs, Fuchs. His name is where fuchsia comes from. So Fuchsia, and you will never forget it now.
All right. What's your least favorite color?
I think I'm pretty color agnostic, so I don't think I have a least favorite color. Yeah.
All right. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Attempt? I think in another, I love the movie business, and I cut my teeth in Hollywood working for movie studios before I became a full magician. So I think in another world, in another life, I would have liked continuing being a movie producer or a movie agent. I think I'm very good at that, putting those pieces together to make TV shows and movies happen.
All right. What profession would you not like to do?
My brother is a social worker, and he's a true superhero, and he works on the front lines with homeless people working in housing in Brooklyn, in New York City. It's unbelievable. And I don't think I could ever do that kind of work. Just the emotional capacity that he has to deal with those hardships and to turn people's lives around is incredibly difficult. And I have his utmost respect.
All right. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Do you want to play a game of Scrabble?
When you arrive,
I have to go in a minute, Reed. I think we're getting close here.
All right.
Yeah.
When you arrive at heaven, who would you like to meet?
Oh, goodness. I mean, I think all these people that I've grown up learning about historically. So obviously Harry Houdini, but then the great illusion builders, you know, and the great magicians from the golden era. I think a lot of these Asian magicians are very cool to me. Ching Ling Fu, Long Tak Sam. These are wonderful, colorful characters I'd love to meet, have dinner with.
All right. And finally, where can people find out more about you on the web?
Well, I'm all over media. My website, David Kwong Magic. I think the coolest thing that's coming out is the How to Fool Your Parents book, which will be out for kids on October 8th. And then I send out a newsletter every 2 weeks through Substack, which has a brand new crossword puzzle every 2 weeks. So that's a cool way to stay in touch. So sign up for that.
And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. That was David Kwong, magician, word expert, and crossword puzzle aficionado.
Yeah.
See you in the next one, everyone. See you there.
Thank you, Reed. Talk to you later.
While the sky burned, getting high off of the fumes, feeling like the bombs outside were flowers. Me and you stayed, watching through the glass as the moon came. Body, soul, and hands, feeling truly like our lives were movies. I swear it's all a dream, no need to be afraid. Some believe there's no escape, like paint's poster. But I just don't agree, I love the way we see the world. I love the way we see the world. I love the way we see the world.